Friends, and welcome to another hour of Dramatic Entertainment. I'm your host, Corey Walker, and I invite you to join me again around the World Public Radio. Today I'm going to do something a little different. Instead of bringing you a radio play from the Golden Age Radio, I'm bringing you a recent reproduction of a classic radio play. Treasure Island is a famous novel written by Robert Louis Stevenson and first published as a book in 1883. Orson Welles adapted the novel for radio for the July 18, 1938 broadcast of Mercury Theatre on the Air. Today's play will feature that same script, but the version was performed for CFUR Radio in Prince George on April 26 in 2019 by Prince George's own Pocket Theatre Company. Cast members include Niall Caffrey as young Jim Hawkins, Frank Caffrey as adult Jim Hawkins and Captain Flint the Parrot, Devon Flynn performs the role of Long John Silver, with remaining roles being played by Andrea Mallett, Sandra Claremont, Al Winchick, and Lynn Brown. Let's enjoy the program.
The Central Interior Zone Network takes pleasure in presenting Peter Matus and the Pocket Theatre on the Air in the third in a series of radio productions. We've brought to the airwaves Sherlock Holmes and Dracula, and now we have tonight's production. Here's Peter Matus to introduce your evening's entertainment.
Good evening and welcome to all our listeners. As much as we think of pirates as being bloodthirsty, terrifying scourges of the sea, there are few among us who haven't fantasized about donning a kerchief, gripping a knife in our teeth, and hoisting the Jolly Roger. Perhaps an answer to a neighbor with a noisy lawnmower, or a supervisor who supervises just a little too closely. Whatever, it's your fantasy, I won't judge. For your listening enjoyment, and perhaps to satisfy some of your bloodthirsty tendencies, we, Pocket Theatre of the Air, present to you this evening Treasure Island, as adapted for the radio by Orson Welles and his Mercury Theatre players from Robert Louis Stevenson's classical novel.
Treasure Island by Robert Louis Stevenson, with Devon Flynn as Long John Silver, Niall Caffrey as young Jim Hawkins, and Frank Caffrey as older Jim, who tells the story. Treasure Island. Now the year is approximately 1783 when we join the story.
Squire Trelawney, Dr. Livesey, and the rest of the gentlemen, having asked me to write down all the particulars of Treasure Island, from the beginning to the end, keeping nothing back but the bearings of the island, and that only because there is treasure not yet lifted, I take up my pen in the year of grace, 1783, and go back to that time, 19 years ago, when my father kept the Admiral Benbow Inn, and the brown old seaman with the saber cut first took up his lodging under our roof. I was 14, but I remember him as if it were yesterday.
15 men on a dead man's chest. Yo-ho-ho, and a bottle of rum.
Jim!
Mother called me from upstairs.
Jim!
Yes, Mother?
Jim, there's a man coming up the road. Go out and see what he wants.
Drink and the devil have done for the rest. Yo-ho-ho, and a bottle of rum.
He came plodding to the inn door, his sea chest following behind him on a handbarrow. A tall, strong, heavy, nut-brown man. His tarry pigtail hanging over the shoulders of his soiled blue overcoat. His hands ragged and scarred with black broken nails. And the saber cut across one cheek, a dirty livid white. Singing that old sea song that he sang so often afterwards.
Yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum. Yo, open up in there. Now then, boy.
Yes, sir.
What do you call this place?
The Admiral Benbow Inn, sir.
Admiral Benbow, eh? Nice. Lonely looking. Pleasant situated grog shop. Folks don't come here much, do they, boy? Not much company?
No, sir. More's the pity.
Ha! No, well then, it's a berth for me. I'm a plain man, rum and bacon and eggs all I want, and that head up there for to watch ships off. I've a mind to stay here a bit. Here, you matey, you with the wheelbarrow, bring up alongside. Help up my chest. You too, boy, it's heavy.
Yes, sir.
Call me Captain, boy, Captain.
Yes, Captain.
Just one more thing.
Yes, Captain?
You ain't seen him, have you?
No, sir. Who do you mean?
Along the road, maybe. You might have seen him somewheres. You can't tell. Let me know if you do, boy. A sea foreign man.
Yes, sir.
With one leg.
Yes, sir.
Captain!
Yes, Captain.
Bring me a noggin of rum, boy.
And so he came to live under our roof. We never knew his name. We called him the Captain. He was a very silent man by custom. All day he hung around the cove or up on the cliffs with a brass telescope staring out to sea. All evening he sat in a corner of the parlor next to the fire drinking rum and water, very strong. And every day when he came back from his stroll, he would ask the same question.
Jim?
Yes, Captain?
Any sea foreign man go by along the road?
No, Captain.
And Jim?
Yes, sir.
You're a good boy, Jim. You wouldn't lie to me ever, would you, Jim?
No, sir.
You haven't seen him, have you, Jim? Jim, there's a silver fourpenny for you on the first of every month if you'll keep your weather eye open for a sea horn man with one leg. Let me know the moment you see him, won't you, Jim? A sea horn man with one leg.
How that personage haunted my dreams. On stormy nights, when the wind shook the four corners of the house and the surf roared in the cove and up on the cliffs, I could see him in a thousand forms. Now the leg was cut off at the knee, now at the hip. Now he was a monstrous kind of creature who never had but one leg, and that in the middle of his body.
You'll keep your weather eye open, won't you, Jim, for a sea foreign man with one leg? A sea foreign man with one leg!
Months went by. The captain bade fair to ruin us, for he kept on staying, week after week, month after month.
And never a penny of money, Jim. Not a penny has he paid us since the day he came here. And me, a poor widow.
Mother, why don't you ask him for some?
Well, I'll tell you the truth.
Jim, I'm afraid to ask him. I'm afraid of that man. Now, if your father were alive.
In all that time, none of us saw the great sea chest that he kept in his room. There were nights when he took a deal more rum and water than his head could carry.
Putting men on a dead man's chest. Yo ho ho, and a bottle of rum.
Often I've heard the house shaking and all the neighbors joining in for dear life.
Drink and the devil had gone for the rest. Yo ho ho, and a bottle of rum.
Quiet in the midships. Quiet!
He would force them all to listen to his stories. Dreadful stories they were, about hanging and walking the plank and storms at sea and the dry tortugas and wild deeds and places on the Spanish Main. By his own account, he must have lived his life among some of the wickedest men that God ever allowed upon the sea. The captain had been living with us almost a year when there occurred the first of the mysterious events that rid us at last of his presence. It was one January morning, very early, a pinching, frosty morning. The captain had risen earlier than usual and set off down the beach with his telescope under his arm. My mother was upstairs, and I was in the parlor laying the breakfast table against the captain's return when the door opened and a stranger stepped in.
Sonny? Oh, come here, Sonny. Is this table for me mate, Bill?
I don't know your mate, Bill. I'm weighing this for a man who stays in the house. We call him the captain.
Well, my mate Bill would be called the captain like as not. Now, we'll put it for argument like that your captain's got a cut on one cheek, and we'll put it if you like that cheek's the right one. Oh, but of course. Oh, save me. There he is now. There's my mate, Bill. That's him with the spyglass under his arm. Bless his old heart. To be sure. You and me, we'll just get back behind the door, Sonny, and we'll give Bill a little surprise. We will. Bless his heart, I says again.
15 men on a dead man's chest. Yo-ho-ho!
Hello, Bill. Come, Bill. You knows me. You knows an old shipmate, Bill. Surely.
Black Dog.
Oh, Black Dog as ever was. Hey, Bill? Bill, we seen a sight of times, us two.
So you run me down. Here I am. Well, speak up. What is it?
Oh, that's you, Bill. You're in the right of it, Billy. I'll have a glass of rum from this dear child here when I've took such a liking to. And we'll sit down, if you please. And talk square, like old shipmates. Sit down, Bill. And you, Sonny, get aft.
Yes, sir.
And none of your keels on me, do you hear?
For a while I could hear just a low gabbing. Suddenly the voices grew higher.
No, no, no! And an end of it! If it comes to swinging, swing all, say I!
I saw a Black Dog, streaming blood, running off down the road. Presently the captain returned, alone.
Jim, give me some rum.
Captain, are you hurt?
Aye, I must get away from here. Get away, that's what. I must get away from here. Ugh.
What's happened? Jim, what's happened? It's the captain, Mother.
The captain? Oh, dear, dearie me, what a disgrace. I've been afraid of something like this would happen ever since he came into this house with that old chest of his.
I got the rum and tried to put it down his throat, but his teeth were tightly shut, and his jaws were as strong as iron. An hour later, our friend Dr. Livesey came.
Doctor, what shall we do? Where is he wounded, Doctor?
Wounded? A fiddlestick's end. No more wounded than you or I. The man's had a stroke.
Where's Black Dog?
Black Dog? There is no Black Dog except what you have on your own back. You've been drinking rum, man, and you've had a stroke. Now, listen to me. One glass of rum a day won't kill you, but if you take one, you'll take another and another, and then you'll die. Die and go to your own place, like the man in the Bible. And the world will be rid of a very dirty scoundrel. Do you understand that? The name of rum for you is death.
About noon the next day, I stopped at the captain's door with some medicines.
It's me, Jim.
Oh, come in, Jim, come in.
He was lying very much as we left him.
Jim, you're the only one here that's worth anything. You know I've always been good to you. Never a month, but I've given you a silver fourpenny for yourself. Now, you see, mate, I'm pretty low and deserted by all. Jim, you'll bring me a noggin of rum, won't you, matey?
But the doctor said...
Ah, doctors is all swabs. If I don't have an arena rum, Jim, I'll have the horrors. I've seen some of them already. Seen old Flint in the corner there behind you, plain as print. I seen him, Jim. I'll give you a golden guinea for a noggin.
When I brought it to him, he seized it greedily and drank it out.
Ah, there, that's some better, sure enough. Now, matey, did the doctor say how long I was to lie here in this old berth?
Why, a week, at least.
Under a week? I can't do that. They'd have the black spot on me by then. The lubbers is going about getting the wind of me this blessed moment. Lubbers couldn't keep what they got and want to nail what's another's. It's in me old sea chest, Jim, the thing they're after. They'll tip me the black spot, I know it. I was first mate, I was. Old Flint's first mate. And I'm the only one knows the place he buried it. He gave it to me at Savannah when he lay a-dying.
What's the black spot, Captain?
A summons from old Flint's crew, a summons. And them that gets it, Jim, is lucky when they're dead.
So, a week went by, and then, about 3 o'clock of a bitter, foggy, frosty afternoon, I saw someone drawing slowly near, along the road. He was plainly blind, for he tapped before him with a stick, and he wore a great green shade over his eyes and nose, and he was hunched, as if with age or weakness, and wore a huge old tattered sea cloak with a hood.
Kind Christian friends, Take pity on a poor blind mariner who has lost the precious sight of his eyes and the gracious defense of his native country, England. And God bless King George. Where or in what part of this country he may now be?
You are at the Admiral Benbow Inn, sailor.
Hey?
Black Hill Cove.
I hear a voice. A young voice. It's here where I miss me dead lights. Will you give me your hand, my kind young friend, and lead me into the captain?
I held out my hand, and the horrible, soft-spoken, eyeless creature gripped it in a moment like a vice.
Now, boy, take me in to the captain.
Sir, upon my word, I dare not.
Oh, you heard me. Take me in straight.
Ow! Oh.
Will you take me in to the captain?
Yes, sir.
Good. And when I'm in view, say to him, here's a friend for you, Bill Bones. If you don't, I'll twist your arm right out of your body. Do you hear?
Yes, sir.
Oh, stash your patter. Damn you! Now forward march!
Here's a friend for you, Bill Bones.
Now, Bill, sit where you are. Business is business. Hold out your left hand, Bill. Boy, take his left hand by the wrist and bring it near to my right. Here's a little bit of paper for you, Bill Bones. Now that's done, I'll be going. Goodbye, Bill. Goodbye.
Jim.
Yes, Captain?
What time is it, Jim?
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock! 10 o'clock, 6 hours. Oh, we'll deader 'em yet. Pew and Black Dog and Long John Silver. The whole crew of 'em will... Ah!
Captain? 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 Captain!
The captain was dead. And there we were, my mother and I, a woman and a boy of 14, alone at night in the house with the dead captain's body on the parlor floor.
He owes us money, he does. A whole year and never a penny from him. And me, a poor widow.
But mother, if Black Dog comes back, or the blind man...
Black Dog fiddlesticks. There's something in that old chest of his upstairs that's rightfully mine. And we'll have that chest open if we die for it.
Mother!
Close the blinds, Jim. We don't want anybody watching from the outside. Now, we have to get the key off him.
Look, Mother. Look.
On the floor, close to the dead man's hand, there was a little round of paper, blackened on one side.
The black spot.
I took it up and found that...
You have till 10 tonight. 4 hours.
Now, Jim, find the key.
I felt in his pockets, one after the other.
Perhaps it's around his neck. Tear open his shirt.
There. Sure enough, hanging on a bit of tarry string, we found the key. Then my mother got a candle in the bar. And holding each other's hands, we went upstairs to his room.
Give me the key, Jim. Now then. Oh, there's nothing in here. Not a thing of value. Not a penny.
Mother, look.
There. Before us lay the last things in the chest, a bundle tied up in oilcloth, looking like papers, and a canvas bag that gave forth at the touch the jingle of gold.
Do you see, Jim? I knew we'd find it. But I'll show you these rogues that I'm an honest woman. I'll have me do, and nothing more. Not a farthing over. Here, Jim, hold this bag.
The coins were of all countries and sizes. Doubloons and louis d'or and guineas and pieces of eight.
Mother.
What is it, Jim?
Mother, listen.
What?
Come, Mother. Mother, come. Take the hole and let's be gone.
No, I'll have me do, Jim, and no more.
But, Mother, you heard him. That was the blind man.
I know what I'm doing. I have my rights.
But, Mother, you don't know.
Oh, dear. I'll take what I have.
And I'll take this. These papers. Quick, Mother, quick. Take my hand.
next moment we had opened the door and were in full retreat toward the village.
Look, Jim, over the hill. There they come.
Run, Mother. Mother, run.
Oh, Jim, I'm going to faint. Oh, Jim, take the money and go on.
Mother.
Oh.
Mother.
She had fainted. I managed somehow to drag her down the bank into the shadow of the ditch. A moment later, the house was surrounded.
Bones! Bones! Bill Bones, will you answer me? Down with the door, then!
Aye!
In, you lovers! Loot the house and find it! Bill's dead!
Hey, Pew! Bill's dead!
Search him, you shirkin' lovers! And the rest of ye, aloft and get the chest!
It was a good thing my mother had fainted, or she would have had to stand there with me while our poor house was ripped apart and smashed. Whatever it was they were after, they did not find it.
Well? Is it there?
The money's there.
Jim, what is it, Jim? What are they after?
The map, Mother. Flint's map.
Hey, Pew, that's the signal.
Oh, scare me, lads. Hold on, you sneaks. It's in the house, you know it is. Shiver me souls if I had me eyes.
The signal, Pew, the signal.
Oh, you dogs, you had your hands on hundreds, on thousands. Are you giving up now? You'd be as rich as kings if you could find it. You know it's there, and you stand there skulking. There wasn't one of you dared face Bill, and I did it. A blind man, and I'm to lose me chance for you. I'm to be a poor, crawling beggar, sponging for rum, when I might be rolling in a coach. If you had the pluck of a weevil and a sea biscuit amongst the lot of you.
That's the last signal!
Get out! Scatter, my lads! Dirk? Black dog, Johnny? Oh, Dirk, you won't leave old Pew. Mates, not old Pew. Johnny? Black dog? Don't leave old Pew! Don't!
When they picked him up where he lay on the road on his side, Pew was stone dead. The horsemen, as it turned out, were revenue officers with some news of a strange lugger in Kit's Hole, and they set forth that night in our direction. They took my mother to a neighbor's house.
Well, Hawkins, they got the money, you say. Well, what in fortune were they after? More money, I suppose.
No, Sergeant. Not money, I think. In fact, sir, I believe I have the thing in my breast pocket. And to tell you the truth, I should like to put it in safety.
Oh, to be sure, boy. Quite right. I'll take it.
I thought perhaps Dr. Livesey...
What? Yes. Dr. Livesey. Perfectly right. A gentleman and a magistrate. Dogger?
Yes, sir.
You have a good horse. Take this lad up behind you.
Yes, sir.
We rode hard all the way till we came to Dr. Livesey's door.
Dr. Livesey? The doctor's supping tonight at the Squire's.
The Squire? So there we go, boy.
We'd arrived at the Squire's. He rose to meet us, very stately and condescending.
Come in, gentlemen.
Good evening, Squire. Good evening, Dr. Livesey.
Good evening to you, friend Jim. What good wind brings you here?
Then the officer stood up straight and stiff and told his story.
Sergeant, you are a very noble fellow, and this lad Hawkins is a trump, I perceive. Hawkins, ring that bell. The sergeant must have some ale.
And so, Jim, you have the thing that they were after, have you?
Here it is, sir.
You've heard of this Captain Flint, I suppose, Squire.
Heard of him? Heard of him, you say? He was the bloodthirstiest buccaneer that sailed. Blackbeard was a child to Flint. The Spaniards were so prodigiously afraid of him that I tell you, sir, I was sometimes proud he was an Englishman.
What interests me is, had he money?
Money? What are those villains after but money?
Well, that we shall soon know. What I want to know is this. Suppose I have here, in my pocket, some clue to where Flint buried his treasure. Will that treasure amount to much?
Amount, sir. It will amount to this. If we have that clue you talk about, I'll fit out a ship in Bristol Dock and take you and Hawkins here along. And I'll have that treasure if I search a year, sir.
Very well. Now, if Jim is agreeable, we'll open the packet. A map of an island with latitude and longitude, writing, tall tree, spyglass shoulder, bearing a point to the north of northeast, Skeleton Island, southeast by east, 10 feet. The bar silver is in the north cache.
Larzy, you'll give up this wretched practice at once. Tomorrow I start for Bristol. In 3 weeks' time, 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 10 days, we'll have the best ship, sir, and the choicest crew in England. Hawkins shall come as cabin boy, and you, Livesy, as ship's doctor. I am admiral.
I'll go with you, squire. Soul Jim, and he'll be a credit to the undertaking. There's only one man I'm afraid of.
Who's that? Name the dog, sir.
You, sir, for you cannot hold your tongue.
In a few moments, we shall be bound for Treasure Island with Dr. Livesy, Squire Trelawney, and Jim Hawkins. We pause now for station identification. This is the Central Interior Broadcasting System.
CFUR 88.7 FM, Prince George. Something missing from your life? Listless? Understimulated? Why not try Cinema CNC? Here you'll find the best in Canadian, international, and art house films, all in the comforts of our home theater at the College of New Caledonia. And don't forget the film festival. Oh, this March will be the 24th annual Cinema CNC Films Festival. For this, we move screenings to the Prince George Playhouse, but with the same comfortable Cinema CNC ambiance.
Cinema, Cinema, Cinema CNC. All the cool kids are doing it. Tonight, the Central Interior Zone Network is bringing you Peter Matus and the Pocket Theater on the air in Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island. As Jim Hawkins was telling us, we're eager to leave the Benbow Inn behind and set out for the docks in Bristol.
It was longer than the squire imagined ere we were ready for the sea. Weeks passed on. Then, one fine day, there came a letter from the squire from Bristol.
Dear Lizzie, the ship is bought and fitted. She lies at anchor ready for sea. It was the crew that delayed me, till the most remarkable stroke of fortune brought me the very man that I required. I was standing on the dock when, by the merest accident, I fell in talk with him. He had hobbled down there that morning with a parrot on his shoulder to get a smell of the salt, he said. Out of pure pity, I engaged him on the spot to be the ship's cook. Long John Silver, he is called, and he has lost a leg. Well, sir, I thought I had only found a cook, but it was the crew I discovered. Between Silver and myself, we got together in a few days a company of the toughest old salts imaginable. I declare we could fight a frigate. Seaward ho, hang the treasure! It's the glory of the sea that has turned my head.
On the 16th of April, the schooner Hispaniola set sail from Bristol Harbor. It was more than 19 years ago, but I remember it as if it were yesterday.
Me, in my new blue cowboy's clothes.
19 years ago.
Leaning over the rail, waving goodbye to my mother, and doing my best not to cry. For at the last moment, it sort of hurt to leave her. Then, a little before noon, Captain Smollett gave an order. The boatswain sounded his pipe. And the crew began to man the capstan bars. Soon the anchor was shored up. Soon it was hanging, dripping at the bows. Then the sail began to draw, and the land and shipping to slip by on either side. The Hispaniola had begun her voyage to the Isle of Treasure. On the second day out, I made the acquaintance of our one-legged ship cook, Long John Silver.
Hey there, boy! Come in! Come on in to Long John's galley!
To tell you the truth, at the very first mention of Long John Silver in the squire's letter, I had taken a fear in my mind. that this might be the very one-legged sailor I had watched out for all those months at the Benbow Inn. But one look at him was enough. I'd seen Captain Bones and Black Dog and Iblan Pew, and I knew what a buccaneer looked like, very different from this clean and pleasant-looking sea cook. His left leg was cut off close to the hip, and under the left shoulder he carried a crutch, which he managed wonderfully, hopping about on it like a bird.
Ah! Pieces of it! Pieces of it! Pieces of it!
Are you Mr. Silver, sir?
Yes, me lad. Such is me name, to be sure. And you're Hawkins, eh? Nobody more welcome than yourself, me lad, in old John's galley. Sit down, hear the news. Your first trip to sea, Hawkins.
Yes, sir.
Well, well. There's a lot of things you're gonna learn afore this here voyage is over. What do you think, Hawkins? And if there's anything you want to know, Hawkins, you just come to old John Silver and ask him, see? He'll tell you.
His galley was as clean as a new pin, the dishes hanging up burnished, and his parrot in a cage in one corner.
Here's Captain Flint. I called me parrot Captain Flint, yeah? The parrot, after the famous buccaneer. Here's Captain Flint, predicting success to our voyage, wasn't you, Captain?
Ah! This is a bit!
Aye, she's a powerful old bird, is Captain Flint. 200 years old if she's a day. And if anybody's seen more wickedness, it must be the devil himself. She sailed with England, the great Captain England, the pirate, and on the old Walrus. That's Flint's old ship, as I've seen amok with the red blood, and fit to sink with gold. She's been at Madagascar, and at Malabar, and Suriname, and Providence, and Portobello. To look at her, you'd think she was a baby, Hawkins, but... you smelt powder, haven't you, Captain? And blood, eh, Captain? And pieces of eight, eh, Captain?
Pieces of eight! Pieces of eight! Pieces of eight! Pieces of eight!
At the end of the third week, we left Madeira behind us. The ship proved to be a good ship. The crew seemed to be capable seamen. There was only one man aboard who was not satisfied, and that was the ship's master, Captain Smollett.
I'll speak plain. I don't like it. I don't like this cruise. I don't like the men. I don't like me officers. That's short and sweet.
But nobody paid much attention to him. Every man on board seemed well content. Double grog was served on the least excuse. There was duff on odd days, and always a barrel of apples standing broached in the waist for anyone to help himself that had a fancy.
Ugh, never knew any good come of it yet. You spoil the forecastle lands, you make devils, that's my belief. We're not home again yet.
But good did come of that apple barrel. It was about the last day of our outward voyage. Sometime that night, or at latest before the noon of the morrow, we should sight the Treasure Island. Just after sundown, when all my work was over, I thought I should like an apple. I ran on deck. The watch was all forward, looking out for the island. I got into the apple barrel. Suddenly, I heard voices on deck.
Look here, barbecue. How long are we gonna stand off and on like a blessed bumboat? By thunder, I want to go into that cabin, I do. I want their pickles and wine and that.
How long? By the powers, the last moment I can manage, and that's how long. How many tall ships, think you, have I seen laid aboard? And how many brisk lads drying in the sun at execution dock? And all for the same hurry and hurry and hurry. He's a first-rate seaman, Captain Smollett is. Sails the blessed ship for us.
We're all seamen aboard here, I should think.
All folks of lands, you mean? I know the sort you are. You're never happy till you're drunk.
Easy all along, John.
I don't know where this treasure is, do I? No more do you, says you. And here's this squire and doctor with a map and such. Well, now I mean this squire and doctor shall find the treasure for us and help us to get it aboard by the powers. After that...
After that? What do we do with them, John Silver, after that?
Well, what would you think we does with them? Put them ashore like maroons? Or cut them down like that much pork? Duty is duty, mates. Wait, wait is what I says. And when the time comes, why, let her rip.
Land ho!
What's that?
What's that?
Land ho!
Land ho!
Land ho!
Land ho!
west of us, we saw it. Treasure Island. 10 minutes later, we were gathered in the cabin. The squire, Dr. Livesey, the captain, and myself.
Now, Hawkins, you have something to say. Speak up.
I did as I was bid. I told them the whole story of Silver's conversation. When that was done, all three, one after another, and each with a bow, drank my good health. Then the squire rose.
Captain Smollett, you were right and I was wrong. I own myself an ass. I await your orders, sir.
This Silver is a remarkable man.
Oh, here's the way I see it. We must go on because we can't turn back. Now, what I propose is that we don't wait for them to surprise us, but that we come to blows at our own time and when they least expect it. There must be some faithful hands left. Well, you must find out who they are.
Jim here can help us more than anyone. The men are not shy with him, and Jim is a noticing lad.
Hawkins, I put prodigious faith in you.
In the meantime, talk as you please. There were only 7 out of 26 on whom we knew we could rely. And of these 7, I was a boy, so that the grown men on our side were 6 to their 19. Next morning, there was not a breath of air moving, nor a sound, but that of the surf, booming 1/2 mile away along the beaches. A peculiar stagnant smell hung over the anchorage. The heat was sweltering, and the men grumbled fiercely over their work. Mutiny, it was plain, hung over us like a thundercloud. Around noon, Captain Smollett came up on deck.
Me lads, we've had a hot day, and we're all tired and out of sorts. A quick turn ashore will hurt nobody. So, you can take the gigs, and as many as please may go ashore for the afternoon.
Hey, wait a bit! Wait a bit, men! What's the hurry? What's the hurry?
John Silver suspected a trick. He hopped around on the deck on his one leg.
What's the hurry, men? Wait a bit, will ya?
Soon the party was organized. 6 fellows were to stay on board, and 13, including Silver, began to embark. Suddenly, I had a mad notion to go ashore too. In a jiffy, I had slipped over the side and curled up in the nearest foresheets of the nearest boat. No one took notice of me. The crews raced for the beach. No sooner had we touched shore than I leapt out and plunged into the nearest thicket. Behind me, I could hear John Silver's voice.
Hey, Jim! Jimmy boy! Hey, Jim! 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 Wait, Jim! Jim!
John Silver was quick at his work. 2 faithful members of the crew were murdered on the island that afternoon, only 1 hour after we landed. The 2nd killing I saw with my own eyes, from where I lay, hidden among the trees.
Will you tell me you let yourself be led away with that kind of mess of swabs?
Sure as God sees me, I'd sooner lose me hand than to turn again me duty.
Mate, it's because I think's gold dust here. Gold dust!
Silver, you're mate of mine no more. If I die like a dog, I'll die in me duty. You've killed Ellen, have ye? Kill me, too, if you can. I defies you.
He started to walk away.
I'll try this, then.
Long John whipped the crutch out of his armpit and sent it hurtling through the air. It struck him in the back and killed him. Then Silver brought out a whistle. I didn't wait. I ran. I ran as I never ran before.
Darby McGraw!
I looked up the side of the hill. Far above me, I saw something leap behind the trunk of a tree. It seemed dark and shaggy. I turned and began to run. Suddenly, the thing appeared in front of me, and running forward, threw itself on its hands and knees before me, and held out its clasped hands in supplication.
Oh!
Who are you?
I'm poor Ben Gunn, I am. I haven't spoke to a Christian these 3 years.
3 years? Were you shipwrecked?
No, mate. Marooned. 3 years lived on goats since then. Berries and oysters. Mate, my heart is sore for Christian diet. You mightn't happen to have a piece of cheese about you now, would you? Oh, many's the night I've dreamed of cheese. Toasted, mostly. And woke up again, and here I was. What do you call yourself, mate?
Jim.
Jim? Jim. Jim. Well now, Jim, you wouldn't think You wouldn't think I was rich to look at me, would you now?
Why, no. Not in particular.
Ah, well, but I am, Jim. I'm rich. Rich. Powerful rich. Oh, Jim. You'll bless your stars, you will. You was the first to find me. Whoa.
Suddenly, his eye fell on the Hispaniola lying far below us. Between it and the land was the jolly boat, with 5 men moving toward shore. But I could not tell if they were our men, or the mutineers.
Jim, tell me true. That ain't Flint's ship.
It's not Flint's ship. And Flint is dead. There are some of Flint's hands aboard. Worse luck for the rest of us.
Not a man with one leg?
Silver?
Oh! If you were sent by Long John, whoa! I'm as good as pork, I know it! I was in Flint's ship with John Silver when old Flint buried the treasure. He and 6 along, 6 strong seamen. They were ashore nigh on a week. And then one day, here come Flint by himself in a little boat. And all 6 all dead. Dead and buried, along with the treasure. How he'd done it, not a man of us could make out.
I told them the purpose of her voyage and the predicament in which she now found ourselves.
Ooh, that Long John. He's a bad one. Then you're all in a clove, itch, ain't you? Well, you just put your trust in Ben Gunn. Ben Gunn's the man to help you. You tell that to your squire, Jim. Ben Gunn's the man, that's what you'll say, and Ben Gunn says you has ideas of his own. Oh, look at that!
Far below us, we saw Union Jack fluttering in the air above the woods.
There's your friends, sure enough.
More likely it's the mutineers.
No, mate. Silver'd fly the Jolly Roger. That's your friends, sure enough. Ashore in the old stockade, made years and years ago by Flint. Woo-hoo! What was that?
That's the ship cannon. We're shooting at the stockade. Come on.
Wait a minute, Jim. Wait! Ben Gunn is fly. Rum wouldn't bring me down there, but remember, Jim, Ben Gunn's the man to help you. And when Ben Gunn is wanted, you knows where to find him. Just where you found him today.
I started to run toward the flag.
Hey, Jim! Jim!
Yes, sir?
You won't forget that piece of cheese, will you, mate?
It was less than a mile to the stockade. It was heavy running through the woods. The shooting was getting louder. Suddenly, before me, I saw a clearing. The smoke of muskets fired nearby. Hey there!
Who goes there?
Hey, don't shoot! It's me!
Who's me?
Me, Jim Hawkins.
Oh, it's Jim! Jim! Jim!
Moments later, I was over the stockade among my friends. And soon afterward, the firing ceased. The mutineers were saving their powder. The stockade was a good place, with palings 6 feet high all around it. We could have held it against a regiment. And here Captain Smollett decided to stay and await our enemy's next move. I told Dr. Livesey and the squire about Ben Gunn.
Hey! Flag of truce! Flag of truce!
Who's that?
Oh, it's Silver. Keep indoors, men. 10-1, this is a trip. Who goes? Stand or we fire!
Flag of truce!
Doctors, watch on the lookout. Dr. Livesey, take the north side, if you please.
Yes, sir.
Jim, the east, gray, west. The watch below, all hands to load muskets. Lively, men, and careful. What do you want with your flag of truce?
Captain Silver, sir, come to make terms.
Captain Silver? Why, you black-hearted scoundrel.
Oh, silence, sir. Silence. If you wish to talk to me, you can come. And that's all. If there's any treachery, it'll be on your side, and the Lord help you.
That's enough, Captain. A word from you's enough. I know's a gentleman, and you may lay to that.
Oh, you'd better sit down.
Eh? You ain't gonna let me inside, Captain. It's a main cold morning, to be sure, sir, to sit outside on the sand. Oh, there's Jim! Top of the morning to you, Jim! Why, there you all are together, like a happy family in a manner of speaking.
If you have anything to say, my man, you better say it.
Right you were, Captain Smollett. Duty is duty, to be sure. Well, here it is. We want that treasure, and we'll have it. That's our point. You just as soon save your lives, I reckon, and that's yours. You have a chart, haven't you?
That's as may be.
Ah, well, you have. I know that. What I mean is, we want your chart. You'll give us the chart to get the treasure by, and I'll give you my affidavy upon me word of honor to clap you somewhere safe ashore.
Is that all you have to say?
Every last word, by thunder. Refuse that, and you've seen the last of me but musket balls.
Very good. Now, you'll hear me. If you'll come up one by one unarmed, I'll engage to clap you all in irons and take you home to a fair trial in England. If you won't. As me name's Alexander Smollett, I've flown me sovereign's colors, and I'll see you all to Davy Jones. You can't find the treasure. You can't sail the ship. And you can't fight us. I stand here, and I tell you so. And it's the last good word you'll get from me. Now, tramp, me lad.
Ah, laugh, by thunder, laugh! Before an hour's out, you'll laugh on the other side. Them that'll die be the lucky ones.
Nothing remained of the attacking party but the five who had fallen, four on the inside and one on the outside of the palisade. The mutineers did not come back that night. They had got their rations, as the captain put it. The next day was stifling hot. After dinner, Dr. Livesey sent for me.
Jim, was it cheese you said Ben Gunn had a fancy for?
Yes, sir. Cheese.
Well, Jim, just see the good that comes of being dainty in your food. You've seen my snuffbox, haven't you? And you've never seen me take snuff. The reason being that in my snuff box, I carry a piece of Parmesan cheese. A cheese made in Italy. Very nutritious. Well, that's for Ben Gunn. Goodbye, lad.
Then he took up his hat and pistols, girded on his cutlass, put the chart in his pocket, and set off briskly through the trees. That afternoon, the blockhouse being stifling hot, and the little patch of sand inside the palisade ablaze with the midday sun, and so much blood about me, and so many poor dead bodies lying around, a new idea came into my head. This was to swim out under the cover of the night, cut the Hispaniola adrift, and let her go ashore where she fancied. The mutineers, after the repulse of the morning, had nothing nearer their hearts than to up anchor and away to sea. This, I thought, would be a fine thing to prevent. It was evening when I reached the east coast of the island. I could see the Hispaniola lying at anchor offshore. And there was the jolly boat, the black flag of piracy flying from her peak. And as the last rays of daylight dwindled and disappeared, absolute darkness settled down on Treasure Island. The next night I was back on land, and I was proud of myself, and with good reason. I had grounded the Hispaniola, beached her up tidily in the North Inlet. With no harm done, safe from the mutineers, I had no trouble finding the stockade. Coming in from shore, keeping close in shadow where the darkness was the thickest, I crept into the blockhouse. I could see nothing. The doctor and the squire must have worried about me. I should lie in my own place, I thought, and enjoy their faces when they found me in the morning. I felt for a place to lie down.
Peace is all right. Peace is all right. Peace is all right!
Who goes? Who goes there? Bring a torch, Dick. Ah, well, well, shiver me timbers. Jim Hawkins. Dropped in like, eh? Quite a pleasant surprise for poor old John. I've always liked you, I have, Jim, for a lad of spirit. A picture of me own self when I was young and handsome. Always wanted you to join me camp and take your share and die a gentleman. And now, me cock, you've got to. You can't go back to your own lot.
Where are they?
No. Where do you think, my son?
Have you killed them?
What do you think?
Well, I'm not such a fool, but I know pretty well what I have to look for. But there's a thing or two I have to tell you. And the first is this. Here you are, in a bad way. Ship lost, treasure lost, men lost. And if you want to know who did it, it was I. I was in the apple barrel the night we sighted land, and I heard you, John, and you, Dick Johnson, and Hans, who's now at the bottom of the sea, and told every word you said before the hour was out. And as for the schooner, it was I who cut her cable. And it was I who brought her where you'll never see her more. Not one of you. I no more fear you than I fear a fly.
Oh, I'll put mine to that. Here's yours, you snake and sinner skunk.
And so will I.
Avast there! Who are you, Tom Morgan? Maybe you thought you was captain here, perhaps.
Tom's right. Kill the boy.
I am.
Kill him.
Did any of ye gentlemen want to have it out with me? Him that wants it shall get it. You won't fight, then? Then by thunder you'll obey. You may lay to it. I like that boy, now I do. Never seen a better boy than that. He's more a man than any pair of rats of ye in this here house. What I say is this. Let me see him that lay a hand on him. That's what I say, and you may lay to it. Hmm? Seems you have a lot to say. Pipe up and let me hear it or lay to.
John.
What?
We got something for you, John.
Well, step up. I won't bite you. Hand it over, lubber. The black spot. I thought so. What's on it? Deposed. Deposed, that's it, is it? Very pretty route, to be sure. Like print, I swear. But it ain't one bit prettier route than this.
What's that?
And what does it look like, lads? A chart! That's what it is, a chart! A chart of this island. Old Flint's chart. Now, what do you say to that?
Oh, yeah, that's Flint's, sure enough.
That's it.
JF and a clove hitch. Is so he done it?
No, Silver's the man. America for Captain.
That was the end of the night's business. Only much later, I woke up suddenly and felt someone beside me.
Jim. Jim, me boy.
Yes, Long John?
I saved your life for you tonight, Jim. Now, you and me, stick close, Jim. Back to back, like, in case of trouble. And talking of trouble, Jim, why did those friends of yours leave that chart behind when they cleared out of here? They did, though. I came in here this morning and found the place empty, and the chart lying there on the table, where I couldn't miss it. And there's something under that. Good or bad?
The next morning, we set out after the treasure.
Tall tree, spyglass shoulder, bearing a point to the north and northeast, Skeleton Island. East, southeast, and by east, 10 east.
Hey, over there, come quick!
At the foot of a pine, half covered with green creeper, a human skeleton lay on the ground.
A skeleton, begad!
It lay perfectly straight, the feet pointing in one direction, the hands raised above its head like a diver's, pointed directly in the opposite.
It ain't natural. It ain't natural. But you know, lads, I've a notion in me old numbskull. Now, here's the compass, and there's the tip-top point of Skeleton Island, sticking out like a tooth. Just take a bearing, will you, along the lines of their bones.
East, southeast, by east.
I thought so. It's a pointer. Right up there's our line for the Jolly Roger and the Pole Star. And this here's one of Flint's jokes. And no mistake. Him and the six was alone here. Alone he killed him. Every man. And this one he hauled up here and laid down by the compass, yes? Six they were, and six we are. And bones is what they is now.
Oh, I saw him dead, O'Flynn. There he lay, with penny pieces on his eyes.
Dead, aye. Sure enough, he's dead. But if ever spirit walked, it'd be Flint's. Dear art. But he died bad, did Flint?
Aye, that he did.
Aye, main hot it were, and the windy was open, and I hear that old song of his coming out clear as hell, and the death all on the man already.
Listen.
15 men on a dead man's chest.
Do you hear what I hear? That's Flint, begad, old Flint!
Darby McGraw!
Oh, Lord!
Darby McGraw, fetch us McGraw!
They was his last words!
Darby McGraw!
Flint's last words, my
Lord! Oh, Lord!
Shipmates! Shipmates! There's 750,000 pounds, not a quarter mile from here. Since when did a gentleman of fortune show his stern to that much dollars for a boozy old seaman with a blue mug, and him dead too?
Be there, John. Don't you cross the spirit.
Spirit? Well, maybe. You know whose voice that was. It was like somebody else's. By the powers, Ben Gunn!
Aye, so it were, Ben Gunn it were.
Why, nobody minds Ben Gunn. Dead or alive, nobody minds him.
Spyglass shoulder, bearing a point to the northeast, Skeleton Island, southeast by an east, 10 feet.
Wait a minute, here's the tall trees.
The first of the tall trees was reached, and by bearing proof the wrong one. So did the second, so did the third.
Oh, here it is. Aye, John Mary, here it is.
Before us was a great excavation. In this was the shaft of a pick, broken in two, and the boards of several packing cases strewn around, all branded with the name Walrus, the name of Flint Ship. The treasure had been found and rifled. The 700,000 pounds were gone. We turned and saw above us on the edge of the pit, Ben Gunn, Dr. Livesey, Gray, and the Squire, all with muskets. The doctor's plan had worked. The pirates had fallen into a trap.
John Silver, you are a prodigious villain and an imposter, sir. But you saved this boy's life, and I'll not prosecute you. But the dead men, sir, hang about your neck like millstones.
Thank you kindly, sir.
I dare you to thank me. It's a gross dereliction of my duty. Stand back!
It took us 3 days to move the treasure from Ben Gunn's cave on board ship. On the 8th day of December, the Hispaniola reached Bristol. 5 men only of those who had sailed returned with her.
Well, that was 19 years ago. All of us got an ample share of the treasure, which we used, wisely or foolishly, according to our natures. Captain Smollett is now retired from the sea. As for Ben Gunn, he got 1,000 pounds, which he spent, or lost, in 19 days, for he was back begging on the 20th. Silver vanished on the voyage off the coast of Mexico, and we heard no more of him. The bar silver and the arms still lie, for all I know, where Flint buried them, and certainly they shall lie there for all of me. Oxen and wain ropes would not bring me back to that accursed island. And the worst dreams that ever I have are when I hear the surf booming about its coast, or wake up at night in bed with the sharp voice of Captain Flint still ringing in my ears.
Ah! Pieces of it! Pieces of it! Pieces of it!
Well, I hope you enjoyed that modern-day presentation of such a classic story. That was the story Treasure Island, performed on April 26, 2019 for CFUR 88.7 FM in Prince George, but based on a 1938 script by Orson Welles. I'm rebroadcasting the play here today with permission. I'm afraid that our time together is almost over. I would love to hear your thoughts on today's program. You may email me at Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at CFASFM.com, or write to me at Old Parlor Radio, 2880 15th Avenue, Prince George, BC, Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. From the CFIS studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week. Thank you.